Cascadia. You are listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Today is Tuesday, June 2nd, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Governor Kulongoski doesn't believe Oregon needs natural gas all that badly.
The Boardman coal-powered energy plant will cost millions to pollution-proof.
And in another sign of the times, a military recruiter in Little Rock, Arkansas, was shot and killed yesterday.
Portland area weather, partly cloudy with a high near 80, and then tonight, partly cloudy and lows in the 50s.
Right on the heels of recent Northwest Natural shareholders meeting, the attention of the corporate energy oligarchs has shifted to Coos Bay. Governor Kulongoski himself has come out and said that he doesn't believe that we need the natural gas all that badly. And, of course, there is the argument that if it's going to benefit the state of Oregon, then why do we need a pipeline through Oregon to California? There are a lot of unanswered questions, and there are a great many answers. To provide some of those and to illustrate what downstate people in the Coos Bay area are facing in their struggle to stop the liquefied natural gas brigades from developing Jordan Cove, we have activist Jody McCaffrey joining us this morning. Good morning, Jody.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
And thank you very much for being with us. I understand that you have a complicated schedule today and that you've taken time to talk a little bit about some of the issues. In Coos Bay, what are some of the unique situations that you face down there in this struggle with the liquefied natural gas interests?
Well, first let me say I'm very grateful to the governor for demanding that these companies prove their need first before they just go plowing big, huge corridors for pipelines that are not actually needed. Down here, this pipeline will actually impact about 379 water bodies, and we know that over 100 of those have fish. They're fish-bearing streams. We also have a huge amount of our forest. It's around 3,000 acres of forest that will be clear-cut. And, you know, this is old growth forest. This includes, spotted owl habitat, marble murrelet habitat. You know, it's areas that our own loggers can't log, that a foreign energy company is going to try to cut down permanently for their pipeline easement.
They're clear cutting a broad swath of land through some really fragile habitat. How do they justify this? What are their arguments?
Well, they're actually, all three of these proposals in Oregon are being presented as import terminals, but we know that that is absolutely not what they'll probably end up being. If you look at these pipeline proposals, the Palomar one, this is up north more towards Portland, and our Southern Oregon pipeline, all these pipelines line up perfectly with these pipelines that are being proposed from the Rockies, and we know that the Rockies gas, there's like over 100-year supply of Rockies gas. When you line this up, it's pretty obvious that we don't need the gas we don't need this imported gas, that it's probably more likely that they're going to, the minute they get these pipeline easements, which they can take by claiming they have an import facility, they'll turn around and say, oh, well, we don't need this gas, we're going to make these export facilities, and then we will be linked up to this worldwide market where the gas is 2 and 3 times the cost that we're paying right now.
So really, Oregon is basically left holding the bag on that one. Thank you very much, Jody. We really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us this morning. Thanks so much. My guest has been Jody McCaffrey, a longtime Coos Bay activist. Thank you.
Governor Kulongoski has restarted what the Oregonian newspaper called his poison pen campaign, criticizing federal energy regulators' environmental reviews of liquefied natural gas terminals proposed in Oregon. Kulongoski doesn't like the FERC's final review of the proposed Jordan Cove LNG terminal in Coos Bay. He believes the feds have jumped the gun by issuing their final environmental analysis of Jordan Cove and giving a conditional approval to a competing LNG proposal on the Columbia River, Bradwood Landing, before the state or other federal agencies who do the analysis of the terminal's impacts have completed their work.
So I guess we know where the Oregonian stands on the issue.
Mm.
They call Kulongoski's objections a poison pen campaign. I hardly see where holding these companies to account would be considered anything like poisonous, but there you are. What is it going to take to clean up pollution caused by an obsolete energy source? Well, the answer to that one is a cool $470 million, and that's at the very least. Oregon regulators want Portland General Electric to install filters and scrubbers that would reduce both acid rain and haze clouding for some of Northwest's most beautiful places. But the National Park Service and a coalition of environmental groups say the proposal for Boardman doesn't make PGE go far enough or fast enough. The reasoning goes like this. We have to fix this thing before it becomes, before we tear it down. Why not just scrap it now and use the money to build alternative sustainable energy sources? That'd be too easy, wouldn't it?
Yeah. The Oregon House yesterday unanimously supported a bill that protects renters living in foreclosed properties. Senate Bill 952B allows renters to stay in a foreclosed house until the lease is up or until the property is sold. The bill also requires that renters get notice of foreclosure proceedings and ensures that security deposits are protected. State Representative Carolyn Tomei says the bill is needed because renters are often the unintended victims of a foreclosure. Under current law, they can be evicted with little warning.
Here's a strange one from Seattle. Two pipelines that carry up to 60 million gallons of sewage a day under Seattle's Salmon Bay turn out to be made out of wood. The two 36-inch pipes are built like barrels with staves and hoops. They were laid in 1935 across the bottom of the waterway that's part of the connection between Puget Sound and Lake Washington, which is why it's worthwhile knowing what goes on around and under us.
Oregon regulators are proposing a new water quality permit for PDX that would reroute much of the airport's de-icing fluid from the Columbia Slough to the Columbia River. Under the proposed permit, the Port of Portland, which runs the airport, would send much of the fluid from de-icing planes, runways, and roads through a pipe to a new outfall in the Columbia River. Let's hope it's not a wooden pipe.
Yeah, it's always been a puzzle to me how the airport deals with these chemicals when they're so close to the Columbia River. The Oregon Department of Agriculture is asking people to use care when battling bugs in their flowers and vegetables. Michael Babbitt, investigator with the Oregon Department of Agriculture's Pesticides Division, says home-use pesticides are often necessary, but using them properly is critical. No one ever reads the fine print on these things, I guarantee it. Babbitt wants pesticide and herbicide consumers to be responsible, but he may be asking a lot. The Agriculture Department licenses commercial pesticide applicators, requiring them to take a test to show their knowledge of how to use pesticides safely. Many of the materials available to commercial applicators are also available to homeowners who've got no idea what they're doing.
The Oregon DEQ has compiled a list of 140 chemicals found commonly in waterways that pose a danger to people as well as fish and wildlife. Senator Vicky Walker, a Democrat from Eugene, says the list is the first step in a long process that moves next into identifying the sources of the pollutants. The top tier of 51 chemicals includes substances from everyday life that build up in the bodies of people, fish, animals, and even plants. They include flame retardants, pesticides, herbicides, pharmaceuticals, components of personal care products, metals, and industrial chemicals.
Well, that takes care of water. Moving right along to fire. It's PR time for Oregon's logging industry. Fire season is here, and big timber is going to milk it for all it's worth. Dozens of small brush fires erupted over the weekend because of lightning, which was concentrated in the southern and central sections of the state. The largest of the lightning-caused fires was sparked on Saturday. The Greengrass fires burned about 3.12 square miles of brush. The Northwest Interagency Coordination Center has reported 35 small fires in Oregon on Sunday, all of which the timber industry loves because then they can come roaring in there and log whatever's left.
The J.R. Simplot Company plans to issue layoff notices to 114 employees at a phosphate mine and a fertilizer plant. The company blames legal challenges from environmental groups trying to stop the agricultural conglomerate's proposed expansion of the mine near the Idaho-Wyoming border. In late May, a three-judge panel of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals stopped the company from preparing for the expansion. The judges said they needed more time to review all the issues.
Thank you, environmentalists.
Yeah.
Well, it's getting hard to keep track of all the political advertising targeting Senator Ron Wyden on the health care issue, but that hasn't stopped us before. What it really comes down to is the question, how much influence are pharmaceutical and medical lobbyists wielding in the crafting of Wyden's plan for Oregon? David Rosenfeld joins us again today to consider some of the issues. Good morning, David. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, we have this Jeff Mapes article from the Oregonian on the Oregon, Wyden's so-called bipartisan plan. It's called the Healthy Americans Act. How far does this really go in terms of providing true health care for everyone? And how far does it go in terms of providing massive revenue for pharmaceutical companies?
The profit is one of the main points of contention that unions and healthcare reform advocates are taking up with Ron Wyden. He's been really adamant sticking to his own plan that he unveiled more than 2 years ago called the Healthy Americans Act. And the main thing that these unions, as well as MoveOn.org, which launched ads this weekend against him and other senators in the Finance Committee, is that Ron Wyden's plan does not include the option for a publicly funded health plan that would not be administered by insurance companies. And, you know, this has been a big point of debate about the thorniest issue in this healthcare debate right now in Congress. And Senator Wyden is just really adamant that that we keep health insurers in the picture, you know, even allowing for-profit health insurers to continue. So, you know, that's what they're really taking aim at. And Senator Wyden has still been very adamant in standing up for his plan. And he has launched his own ads that have been airing recently, you know, saying that this is maybe a sign that his plan is on the right track, because both the industry and unions and progressive groups are, they don't like it. So I guess, you know, he's sort of using that as
So he thinks it's on the right track,
right?
Because the people who would benefit from some sort of publicly funded health plan are very upset by this.
Yeah. I mean, he feels like he's struck a compromise, but it seems like, you know, he's just making people angry, so.
Thank you so much for that. My guest, of course, is David Rosenfeld. He's an independent journalist and works also with the Lund Report. Thank you so much for that, David.
Okay, thanks.
Police in Arkansas say a military recruiter was killed in a shooting at an Army-Navy recruiting office in Little Rock, and a second recruiter was wounded. Little Rock police said one recruiter was fatally wounded when a man inside a black SUV fired shots at the office in West Little Rock at about 10:30 a.m. The irony is that military recruiters are paid to convince young people to kill for a living.
Right. So why are they so upset about this?
I guess it's working.
It works. And now, finally, story of the day. Shell Oil faces accusers in New York court today over the execution of Nigerian activists. During the mid-1990s, Nigerian author and activist Ken Saro-Wiwa led a movement to challenge oil giant Royal Dutch Shell for their environmental devastation of the land and abuse of local people as they drill for oil in the Niger Delta region. In 1994, Saro-Wiwa and eight other Ogoni tribal leaders, who were also part of his movement, were accused by the former Nigerian military regime of murdering four Ogoni chiefs. After a special military court found the activists guilty of what human rights groups claim were trumped-up charges, the nine accused were hanged. Today, 14 years after Sarawiwa's execution, Shell Oil Company will face charges in court in New York. This will set a precedent for future trials and cases involving corporate entities and human rights activists. So we'll want to watch that one very, very closely.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Tuesday, June 2, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Janet Anderson. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delton.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support, and your support only, keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, Flashpoints. Former PLO advisor Deanna Bhutto, an interview about hearings in the San Francisco 8, and a Jewish-Canadian activist talks about being dropped from an art exhibit because of her anti-Zionist activities.
Thanks for listening, and have a good day.